So yeah, I'm going to talk about Osmosis Tester, but specifically some work I've been doing lately about adding GPRS support to it. So quick recap, Osmosis Tester, it's some software written in Python, which actually is in charge of doing end-to-end testing with real hardware. So it just starts the whole network every time, and then we write Python tests, which do whatever we want, and then we get some results from there. Yeah, and the idea is to test the different hardware. So yeah, which kind of stuff did we want to test, actually? So regarding GPRS, we have that several KPIs we want to have a look at, like, yeah, latency, throughput, actually check if there's some fair queuing between MS at the same time. Then also different scenarios we want to test, which are, they are usual in real life, and actually we get some reports that some of them don't work sometimes in real networks. So we had this issue, for instance, in which we've been told that if a user is not sending data, then after a while, then it won't be able to receive packets from the coming from the network. So this kind of setup actually helps us, test these kind of behaviors with real hardware. Some other interesting stuff about this project is being able to test some specific hardware, like, for instance, NanoBTS. So we support a dynamic PDCH channel there. So switching from PDCH to TCH channels, for instance. And that actually allows us to check if we had any regression with any change. This kind of testing involves lots of different projects like OsmoBTS, OsmoPCU, whatever. So lots of stuff involved. So as we said, Osmosis Tester, which is on top, it's orchestrating all the processes. I'll go later about that NetNS stuff, that box. You can basically see Osmosis Tester controlling all different processes. So from left to right, let's say MS side to more like core network side on the other end. First of all, we have a client application. In this case, for instance, we just run iPerf. So we just want to send some data and see actually if it goes and what's the throughput we get. We use Ofono actually to driving the modems, which then we'll end up sending something over the air. In this case, in Osmosis Tester, we are actually wiring everything up. It will go through the core network, and eventually we'll reach out the GCSN, which will output some IP data, which will end up in iPerf server, and back. So you may notice I added there in the middle of Ofono and modem UDEF in this case. So I'm going to explain later lots of issues we had and how UDEF is related to those. We'll see later. Going back here. Actually, all this is running in same host. So everything's running on the same network setup, let's say inside the same host. Actually provides us with some issues. So basically, when we want to test one specific modem, because we want to test like what we said, this path. If you have everything on the same host, then it's just going to be routed to a loopback, right? I mean, see, if you have iPerf client process and iPerf server running on the same host, it's basically going just through loopback. And of course, that's not what we want, because we want it to be sent over the modem. What's the problem there? If we want to set up routing accordingly to route traffic through the modem interface, it happens that actually we end up in some kind of routing loopback, because you've tried to fit all data into the modem interface, and then it gets out of GGSN, but then if you route it again, it basically will try to route, and then the packets are dropped. So it was not working at all. Of course, you can fix that by using some IP tables magic, like FW marking packets, and then deciding on whether FDW mark is mark, or so you can make some tricks. But the problem with that is that actually that's a bit. It's not good to do that in case that we are actually changing network dynamically, which is what we are doing in Osmosis and Tester. Like, we are bringing networks up, we are bringing networks down, so it's not really fit for here. Like, this kind of complex configuration, it's nice if you have just one host, actually with some static or mostly static set, network configuration, and you are done with it. So the obvious solution, well, obvious after testing or thinking about it for a while, was actually to have different net namespaces in the same host, and then actually move one modem interface, network interface, to each network namespace, and then just add default routing through that network interface. So let's say you have three modems, then you create three network namespaces, you move the network interface announced by the modem. So when you connect it as a USB, then you get a network interface assigned to that modem. You move that to the network namespace. Then in that network namespace, you configure the routing to send all default traffic through that interface. And then it will be sent. We go back here. So it will be sent over there. Routing will actually, when you run Hyperfly inside the NetNS, it will take the default route. Then it will go through there, and then it will end up in OsmosGGSN, which will output in the default network namespace. And then it will actually be able to route without having a loop there, because the routing in the default network namespace is different than this one. So that's how the routing is set up. So that's the conclusion we arrive here. We decided we want one network namespace per modem. So now the objective is actually to find a unique net namespace for each modem, because actually on top we want OsmosGSM Tester to be able to infer the network namespace for each modem, because like, I'm OsmosGSM Tester, I'm managing modems, so I'm going to use this modem, but okay, now I need to know which network namespace I need to use for that modem to run the test, because as we said, we are moving one the E-phase to one network namespace. So how we do it? In OsmosGSM Tester, we identify modems actually by its system path. So it's def path from UDEF, or system path from slash sys. Why do we do it? Why do we do that? Basically because Ofono doesn't provide with persistent unique names of modems. So basically, if you list your modems in Ofono, the modem names actually can change over time. So the same physical modem can actually, if it goes down and it goes up, it crashes, and so it's re-registered, the name showed by Ofono will change. So the only way to actually identify a modem is by using the system path property that also Ofono brings us, actually, because we send a patch to add that. Yeah.
Maybe to illustrate that, it's similar to, let's say, persistent or non-persistent TTY USB names, right? You unplug and replug your serial converter and they get different names, and it's the same issue.
Yep, indeed. I mean, we'll see it later. It's the typical, it's the same issue we have with network interfaces, right? That's why supposedly systems move to have a persistent naming of Ethernet interfaces. So instead of F0 with one, we moved. We'll go there. We'll see that also has some limitations. Coming back here. So we have one unique syspath per modem, and that means that since that's unique, we can infer a network namespace for that. So actually, the way that Linux makes up the paths, if you see as you go to the right, the directory names become larger. That's because actually, the directory name actually contains the whole path, so that's like hubs in the middle or whatever, so it's like, it's a tree, so last directory actually contains kind of the whole tree, so that should be kind of enough to identify where is a device located. Yeah, so I mean, then actually you see the net device in this case is WW10. So we decide that the network namespace that we are going to use for this interface is going to be that 1536, which is actually just its position according to USB 3, let's say. So yeah, reach that point. We know the interface of a modem, and then we know the network namespace name that we are going to use for that modem to run the tests. Now I'm going to enter into some internals of Ofono, UDEF, and network namespaces to show you some issues that we can run into. So first of all, Ofono. As I said, Ofono uses UDEF basically to find modems. So Ofono starts up and says, OK, where are the modems? It just starts checking on UDEF, uses UDEF Monitor API to do that. And then it has kind of its own database inside, just in code. And then it checks like what it finds there. And then it does some matches. And then from there, it infers, oh, this is a modem. I will create some objects for that. And at the same time, it also takes this device from UDEF, and then it finds that, oh, it has a subdevice of type network or net. And then it infers, OK, this is the network interface of this modem. So it kind of builds its own object, right? Something important, too, which we notice is so Ofono, as we said, it has this modem object, and then it infers it has this network object, which is attached to this modem. Through UDEF code, if Ofono detects that this network device is dropped, we'll see later why it can happen. So it disappears from the kernel, so this net interface is gone. Then it will decide to actually drop the entire modem. Okay, so that means that you cannot use that modem anymore. Then let's talk about UDEF a bit. UDEF runs in the default network namespace. That means that actually only sees and manages network interfaces or devices in general which are on the default network namespace. What does that mean? So for those who don't know, the default network namespace is the usual one you use, basically if you don't move anything to another network namespace. So if you don't know about network namespaces, you are using the default network namespace. UDEF also does that. UDEF actually talks with the kernel through a Netlink socket, and from there it receives notifications on the status of the devices, right? So what happens when you move a network interface from the default network namespace to another network namespace? Kernel decides that, let's say, all processes on the default net running under the default network namespace should no longer be able to use or know about this network namespace. So it tells UDEF that this network interface is removed. Okay. And then if you take this network interface, which is in another network namespace, and you move it back to the default network namespace, UDEF will actually see that it appears again. So actually, you can trace that with UDEF admin or whatever. So you will see a remove event and an add event. We ask about this behavior in the GitHub issue you see here in systemd. And Leonard Potter answered that, it's known behavior. It's kernel limitation, let's say, so systemd UDEF runs in the default network namespace, and we cannot do anything about that. So that's how it works. What's the conclusion about these two programs? If we move a network interface to another network namespace, which is not the default one, UDEF will send a remove event to its clients, and that means that Ofono will receive a remove event for that network interface, and that means that Ofono will drop the modem out, so you cannot reach it anymore. And that's not what we want, of course, because we want to use different modem different network namespaces, but still we want to be able to use it through Ofono. So what we need to do, we patch Ofono to actually avoid this kind of behavior. So we have a Ofono patch in our OsmosGSM tester branch. which actually prevents Ofono from removing modems if the network modem is removed. If the network interface is removed, sorry. Okay, that's some of the limitations. Let's go now to see an example on how a test using GPRS in OsmoGSM Tester looks like. Like all tests, basically the first block is common to all tests. We import modules, we start the whole network, so we get the objects, we start BDS start, SGSN start, whatever start. Then we have the MS object, which is actually a modem, which underneath uses Ofono. And we tell the HLR to add the subscriber data from this MS. Then we tell the MS to connect to the MSC. That's actually an asynchronous function, so it just starts the registering. Then we also tell the MS that it is allowed to attach in GPRS to this network. That's also asynchronous. And then in the test, we basically wait for the MS to be connected to the MSC, so to be registered, and to be attached to GPRS. So once we are here, we have an MS which is connected to the MSC, and actually GPRS is attached. At that point, we want to activate a PDP context. So we just tell the MS which APN do we want to connect to, and the protocol we want to use, IPv4, IPv6, whatever. And next function is setup context data plane. We'll see later what this function does internally. Once that context data plane, so basically just summary, this function does all these network namespace movements and setups and whatever. And then we simply run a ping command in this case. So the first case I showed it was using iperf. In here, I'm just pinging the GGSN address. And if it fails, then basically the test is going to fail. And then finally, I deactivate the context. So that's how the test looks like. And now we're going to see some internals of this test. First of all, that's what Ofono does behind the OsmoGSM Tester API. So just for you to understand, green stuff in variables, it's DBus paths. So you have a DBus path for each modem. And then you'll see context Y, that's another path, which is created. It's a context, it's a PDP context for each modem. So first of all, that's useful in case you want to do it manually with Ofono. So first of all, each modem has an interface called Connection Manager, from which you can operate GPRS-related stuff. So you can see example of get properties. So you have some information like right now it's not attached. Bearer actually is not implemented with QMI. There's a ticket about that. Whether we are allowed roaming, powered, whatever. So what do we want to do in this case? So we power it on and we allow roaming in case we don't use the same MCC, whatever. Then we wait for Ofono to tell us that actually we are attached. Because attach is only a read-only property. So we power it on, then it should attach at some point. Then we add a PDP context, and it will return the DBus path, so we can set it up. Now on this context, we actually set it up like access point name, username, password, protocol, etc. Finally, we activate it. And once it's activated, we can get some properties about it. And that's what the kind of properties we get from Ofono once we are established. So some interesting stuff. You get the DNS values, which are set on OsmoGSM. We are still not checking those values are correct in OsmoGSM Tester. But it's quite straightforward. It's just about adding some functions. Actually, we fixed back in Ofono a few weeks ago, because basically the first one was duplicated. Actually, this probably is the case, and I'm running an old version of Ofono here. Something also really important for us, Ofono provides us with the interface name here assigned to that modem. Actually, in here it says method static. I think, well, Linksys will know better, but that means you can configure modems in two ways, like dynamic, which is using the DHCP, and actually that's what we are using, and static is you need to set up the address, I think. Oh, by the way, I think address in here is actually the address that is assigned to you by GGSN. So if you remember the test, I was talking about explaining you later the setup context data plane function. So that's what basically it does. As I said, we have to move. So if at this point we know the interface name from that modem, so we know which interface do we have to move to our network namespace. I also explained already how to get the name of the network namespace we want to use. So we have all the data there. So we just move it. I'll explain you later how we do that. But just call this function, and it moves the network interface to the network namespace we selected. And then we have to set up this new network namespace and the modem interface. So basically, we have to bring up the network interface and run the DHCP on it. Yeah, and so why do we want actually to move the network namespace, the network interface to the network namespace every time? So originally, we actually only had one Python script which just set up all network namespaces and moved all the interfaces there. But that would be perfectly fine if the interfaces would always stay in that network namespace. But that's not the case because modems crash. And basically, when a modem crash, when modem crash, then the kernel actually drops the network interface, and then when the modem is back again, the modem re-registers the network namespace. But the kernel may decide to use a different network interface name than the one that it used to use before. So basically, it will try to get. So the way that the kernel assigns the network namespace, sorry, the network names, is basically it looks for the first counter available in the default network namespace, as far as I could understand from looking at several traces. That's dangerous because actually, if you may end up in this scenario, you can even end up in the situation where you have two modems, and then modem A has WW10 and modem B has WW1, and you can end up actually at some point having the two modems actually with the two network interface names swapped. So, and that's a bit dangerous because actually Ofono doesn't detect this kind of stuff, especially because we added this patch to avoid removing the devices. So it could happen that since we are moving network interfaces to network namespaces, it could happen that we were moving actually the wrong network interface, because we still thought that that name was assigned to that modem, but it was swapped. So it was a bit of a mess. I'm not going to go into details of the series of events in case you want to look at it, but it can happen. So what's the conclusion from all this mess? Ofono should require catching interface renaming at some point. So you can just issue a interface renaming by calling IP-link set that way. Of course, we don't do that, but I mean, in theory, it should support it in case somebody just wants to rename an interface for the modem, and they don't do it. Since all this naming stuff is a mess, let's just go sane and use persistent naming also for network interfaces, so we don't end up having this kind of renaming mess. So we decided we want to have persistent naming for interfaces we use. So let's add some rules to UDEV to actually have persistent naming, right? So here's a sample of the rule we initially used to do that. So it will basically use this import built-in net ID. So this actually this fits into the into UDEF some variables which you can use to set up persistent naming. So as I said before, nowadays we have this persistent naming of interfaces in Linux, like you have WWP blah 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 blah. So this actually is calculated, let's say, or generated by this net ID module, and it's fit into that kind of variable ID net name path. So that looks fine, right? I mean, for the first case, we initially get a W12 interface by the kernel, and we just rename it to something persistent. So in case you don't know, also the last lines of the new name, it's also based on the path, on the USB path. Well, it's persistent as long as you don't move the path, but it has some limitations. We'll see. In this case, for instance, you may see like that was real. So after applying this rule, some of the interfaces were moved, so were renamed, but not, some others, they were not. So there's small difference between one syspath and the other one. One is a bit larger than the other one. So what's the problem here? So Linux defines this define, ifnamsys, which is 16. And that's the maximum name an interface can have in Linux. And what's the problem here? So as you start stacking up stuff in USB, your tree becomes larger, your path becomes larger, and eventually you cannot fit that into this persistent naming scheme, right? So if you count there, it's probably, I mean, I made it probably by hand, but it should be like 15, but then if you try to add a zero, like change that 2 by a 10, it's going to be 16. So the kernel basically, in this case, when NetID is run, it detects the path is too large in UDEF, so it basically won't allow this, and ID net names path won't be fit, so it will be empty. So that means that the rule is not applied. Because yeah, systemd UDF detects that the path is gonna be too long, so it's not gonna work. So how do we fix it? We have other ways of let's create our own persistent naming scheme. For those cases in which ID net name path is not set by ID net, let's do it our own way. So we take the dev path. You remember how we got persistent network namespace unique names? We just got the last part of the system ID, right? It's actually the same as in here, it just builds the path, right? But it's too long. Okay, so just let's hash that. That's the way I found out. I mean, we take the dir name of the dev path, so in this case it would be like 15410. We hash it. I have to use dir name, by the way, because the last stuff on the path, it's actually the interface name, which of course changes over if the modem crash, because it increases. So that's not unique. So you need to take the dir name. And you hash it, and you take 14 bytes, which is like, yeah, probably could be 15, but as you, yeah. Oh yeah, but there's an error there, so. We end up with this kind of naming, but it's unique. It's a bit strange, but it's unique. So it doesn't change, and we are not affected by these issues anymore.
No collisions yet,
and if we have some, I guess we can just rearrange some USB paths to not get them. I mean, it's elevated to 14. So, I mean, we are not like running, I don't know, 1 million modems there, so should be quite fine. And still, I mean, for some paths, we still use the other one, so it's still less possibilities, so. Up to here, everything looks fine. We are solved, but actually I still saw sometimes some interfaces were not being renamed. So debugging it a bit more, Yeah, and actually this renaming looked a bit like random, actually. So it was not happening always on the same interfaces, it was happening sometimes. So debugging it with UDEF admin test, so with debug enabled, I could see that actually UDEF was sending some failure messages saying that the interface was actually busy. And looking up on the internet, that means that actually, so in order to change the name of an interface, it must be down. It cannot be up. So you have to turn it down before before changing the name. But actually, that was a bit strange because, I mean, the interface was just brought that by the kernel. I mean, just the device was started. So I didn't understand how could it be that it was up if nobody was using it. But actually, it seems that somebody was using it even before UDEF. So it's a known issue that DHCP CD, it's also using a netlink socket against the socket, so against the kernel. So it can happen that DHCP CD gets notification before UDEF does about this interface. So it tries to use it, to use DHCP on it. That means it brings it up and it tries to use it. So it can happen that when UDEF tries to rename this interface is already up and being used by DHCP. So the solution for that is actually to tell the DHCP CD to not use these kind of interfaces by adding this configuration entry. So we say just don't handle interfaces starting with WW or R, which match our prefixes. By the way, if somebody wants to read more about the issue in there. So up to here, we have persistent interfaces, and we are fixed with that. Some other stuff. So one limitation of network namespaces I could not solve in a clean way is basically you need root access to actually change network namespaces. So from one process to another, you must be root. And Osmos GSM Tester is run under Jenkins, which is not root. So, and we said that we are creating network namespaces. We are forking, well, we are creating processes in other network namespaces. So we need to be root, right? So, okay, just a quick answer for that is, okay, let's just add some pseudo wrappers. I know it's super ugly. Don't hit me, please. But yeah, it kind of works, right? So we have some EDC sudoers lines there, which allow for Osmos GSM Tester group to run some scripts, right? Like this Osmos GSM Tester NetNS execs, which basically calls IPNet and exec the network namespace and the program we want to run. You may remember these two programs here. IP link set dev blah 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 UDHCP. That's run on the network namespace to set it up, so that must be run under root. And I'm back here. But then that actually made some other problems. So Osmos GSM Tester, you can see the process tree there. Osmos GSM Tester runs sudo, which then runs Osmos, so the script, and the script runs iperf, right? Because we're running that on a different network namespace. So you have a process which is not root running something as root, because sudo is suid, so that's root. That means that you can only kill that if you're root. So we had to add some code in Osmos GSM Tester to actually do sudo kill in this case, because otherwise we could not kill that process. That was one of the issues. Next issue was that actually while running tests, we noticed that these processes run under sudo for some reason were not being killed correctly, even if we were using sudo kill. And so reading a bit more on sudo documentation, it says that sudo prevents being killed by its children. So it's to prevent, I don't remember why exactly, but it's to prevent some kind of situation. But actually the documentation is wrong. It's not that sudo prevents its children to kill it. It actually, it prevents the whole process group to kill it. So that means that the parent itself, the parent process which forked to sudo, is not allowed to kill it. No, sorry. No, I'm wrong here. It's not that you cannot kill it. It's that it would won't forward the signals you send to it. So usually, if you send a signal to sudo, it will forward it to the child, right? It created, but the documentation states that it's not gonna forward these signals for signals sent by the children it created. So that's to avoid, yeah, that's to avoid the children to kill themselves by killing sudo, something like that. Yeah, but the problem here is that it's not only kind of children, it's more like it extends to relatives, you know? And documentation doesn't state so, but actually the process which forks to sudo cannot have its own signals forwarded. So if you run something under sudo and then try to send some signal to sudo, it won't forward it to its children. Actually, if you do that on the terminal, I think it works. I'm not sure, but not if the process is just forked directly. So in order to fix that, we have to, in OsmosGSM Tester, when we when we call sudo process, we have to add this flag here, which actually changes the process group of the sudo process, so we can kill it later. So that's the end of the drama so far. Tests are quite stable GPRS-wise nowadays. Of course, modems keep crashing, but it's not like we can do a lot of stuff about that. But they just crash from time to time, and we recover from that. So only a few tests fail from time to time due to that. And we still have to contact vendors or whatever to get some updates. So related topics on the future. I'm almost done, by the way. We need to add 3G network support, which also implies a data plane there. Then some of the implementation stuff, which may be useful. I won't go into detail now, but Ofono in QMI, we can specify IPv4 V6 EUAs or IPv4 IPv6. It just gets whatever it wants and use whatever they want because it's not implemented correctly. And so right now we are running iperf tests fine, but we are actually not checking the results. So I mean, we get, if you look at the logs, you see uplink and downlink throughput for each modem, but we are not checking those and comparing them with some thresholds or KPIs or whatever. So we need to do that, and we need to find out what do we want exactly there. There's plenty more tasks in Redmine. So, final remarks, that's my last slide. What we found out, network namespaces and real hardware don't play well together. So that's a mess. I mean, my feeling is that that's super nice when you are running virtual machines and whatever, but software which is prepared to run with real hardware doesn't play really well with that, like Ofono. Or UDEF. As always, I think I've copied this line in all my OsmosGSM tester talks. Controlling the modems correctly is hard. Stability issues, they crash, all of them, all vendors, no matter which one. And yes, this EFACE name limitation of 16 byte really sucks. And that's it.
Did you try to investigate what actually makes the modem crash?
No, as you can see, I was busy enough trying to get tests working, so.
Okay.
There's a second mic. This is really amazing work. I was trying to do the same, and then I managed to do it using good old PPPD. And did you consider something similar with Ofono? Like, I tried and didn't manage to use maybe because it's too lame with Ofono.
What do you mean with something simpler?
PPPD and just fire some AT commands to connect.
Well, Harald probably knows more about that, but as far as I know, AT, it's kind of a rainforest, you know? Like, You don't want to go there.
Well, the problem is AT commands have many different dialects, and if you've ever tried to write a parser for any kind of modem AT commands, it's a nightmare, because every modem or even firmware updates, then they speak slightly different dialects, and especially if you then want to deal with unsolicited results codes and so on. I mean, we don't want to only set up a data connection. If that was all we wanted, that would be nice, and you could, I mean, you could use, it's not simpler, but you could use modem manager, for example, but we want to do all these voice features, right? That's what most part of Osmo GSM Tester is about. Also is to really register, unregister, issue a voice call, accept a call, you know, whatever, maybe put the call on hold in the future or send SMSs and so on. And if you want to do all that by hand using AT commands, that's going to be a rather complex task with all the things running asynchronous and processing unsolicited result codes. So it's also not simpler in the end.
Also interesting from QMI, from using QMI, we get some nice features we actually have in our branch of Ofono. Like we print all the QMI messages we get to standard out. So, I mean, we get quite a lot of logging. Actually, we run out of journal CDL or journal D buffer log for Ofono because we print so much information during the 16 hours it runs the whole test that actually. I think I tried increasing the buffer of it, but I'm not sure if it's actually applied correctly yet. I have to check. So,
just out of curiosity, Ofono uses to talk to the modem AT commands, or there's
it depends on the modem. So some modems, so when it runs through UDEF, it actually finds which kind of modem it is, and then for each modem it has. Yeah, it decides like, no, I'm going to use AT for this one, and then it has some specific configuration for that one. Because, of course, as we said, like each modem uses a slightly different AT commands, and so there's lots of if-else in AT. I see some patches about that, like really trying to, oh, this works for me, but that doesn't work for me. So it's kind of, so at least with QMI, it's kind of standardized interface, though. Some modems we saw, like Govi 2000, they implement older versions of QMI, then some stuff is not supported. So, yeah.
How possible or difficult is it to run the whole Osmo GSM tester at home? Like, does it need to be within a Jenkins environment or anything like that? Or?
Well, the virtual one, you can run it in Docker. The other one, it's. It's a good question. I mean, it depends on really if you want it or not. Like we have some debug test, which is nice because it sets up everything, and then you can use a phone to do some tests. It's a bit. I mean, there's a lot of configuration involved, but once you have that and you copy the one from production, it's kind of feasible. Let's say the problem is that it's thought to actually be on a static system, so of course, if you change your modem to another place, then you need to change the configuration because the configuration contains the system path of the modem. So I mean, it can be done.
Okay. The other thing I was just thinking there, I remember a few years ago looking at what you could do with Android devices and from like a automated standpoint. Have you looked at that at all? I seem to remember thinking that you should be able to like. To airplane mode toggles and
well, I mean, you can do that because Ofono actually. So I think the guys from Yola, they have their own fork of Ofono with lots of patches, and actually they support a backend for real, which, as far as I know, is kind of the backend that Android uses to control the modems. So that means they support lots of modems that are actually Android. But of course, you need to run probably some Linux-based operating system on those Android phones. But I mean. That there's some phones which do that, and you don't need like fancy drivers. You just need the modem there to test stuff.
Of course, it would be possible to write some Android app or whatever, but if it's already sucks that the baseband processor crashes and you have to recover and wait and so on and so on, just imagine how often your phones will need to reboot during any kind of automated test setup and how many hours every day you're just waiting for entire Android phones to reboot completely or get stuck somewhere or whatever. So I'm not entirely optimistic that this would increase the reliability or anything on that regard. regard. I mean, what many people don't know is if you actually look under the hood on many phones, the baseband processor crashes several times a day, and you know it just reboots. I'm not expecting it to be any more stable, or any more reliable than using modems.
I mean, in our case, we also had lots of phono crashes because we stress it quite a lot, because we are really like, okay, now we pour it on, now we pour it off, and we do it really quickly because, and then some stuff is still ongoing. So I mean, yeah, we reported several stuff because.
So, out of curiosity, why do you need DHCP CD in the first place? I thought you used UDHCP in the slides.
Well, that's. I mean, OsmoGSM Tester is just running on a Debian computer, and it happened to have DHCP CD running. Actually, it only happened on the R&D. I don't know why. It was only running on the R&D setup, not on the prod setup. So that was even more messier because I had kind of it working. Well, I was seeing that kind of things in R&D, but not in prod. And then the system paths also were longer in prod. So when I had it working in R&D, then I started running it in prod, and suddenly nothing worked. So yeah.
One thing that I'd like to add about the setting up your own OsmoGSM tester, as far as I know, the setup of the actual the software and all the stuff that you need, there are Ansible playbooks for that. So it's only in quotes all the configuration files, which is complex in itself, but at least all the software installation and all that is automatic.
Yep. So
Does the modem crash actually, and how do you deal with it within one run of the whole test suite?
That's a good question. I don't know, to be honest. Like, the problem is, the problem until now is before these fixes, when it crashed, then yeah, everything got into a messy state because then interfaces were not moved, so tests were failing because it was trying to send stuff through the interface which was not correct. So it was really difficult to figure out. Right now, stability is quite better in the sense that if it crashes, it will only crash for that test, so that test will fail only and not the next ones. But yeah, I didn't really have time to look into that because it's kind of stuff that I do daily because it takes like 16 hours to run or 18 hours, so I just look at it at the results every day. But anyway, I don't have time to fix all the issues. Like, there's some stability issues also still in NanoBTS and some stuff, but it's quite better now. I mean, if you look at the wave, so just only one thing. We support the scenarios like, I'm in a call, and then I'm using data packets, and then I get a call in the middle, so it switches to the call. Scenarios in which we actually change PDCH dynamically, so we test all these kind of scenarios. So I mean, if at some point you want to test any of these scenarios or you want to add it, should be kind of easy. And I mean easy because sometimes you think adding a small feature, but then everything crashes. And you spend like 1 month trying to fix stuff. And yeah, that's it.
Which modem do you recommend to use? Like, which one crashes less?
So far, the best one. Actually, we are using. We are using Sierra wireless modems for call, so for voice related, voice signaling related tests, and EC20 for GPRS ones. Because Sierra Wireless was crashing more during GPRS tests, I checked. And EC20, I think I had issues with them with audio. So, with signaling of voice call. So actually, OsmoGSM Tester allows you to select the kind of modems through configuration for each test. And we do that. So we say, run with this BTS and this modem, and or this modem type, and then it allocates it from the pool and whatever. So. Yep.
Okay.